Hi, I'm Dylan Bennion, and welcome back to another episode of the Cognition & Co. podcast, Psychology in South Africa. On today's episode, we'll be talking to the Cycle for Mental Health team, consisting of Manuel van der Net and Joshua McQuirk. I managed to catch up with them a few days before they embark on their incredible 1,600-kilometer journey across South Africa as they attempt to raise funds and awareness for mental health. Okay, we're joined here today by the incredible crew from Cycle for Mental Health. We've got Manuel van der Net and Joshua McQuirk joining us, well, not really in studio, but, you know, via Zoom, as you can hear in the audio. But these two incredible young men will be undertaking a massive, massive journey for mental health. And we wanted to chat to them a little bit more about what exactly they were up to. So welcome, guys. Welcome to the Cognition Co. podcast.
No, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
We're really, really excited about being here.
Yeah, yeah. Me too. I'm excited to finally get you guys on here. I think this is going to be excellent. Why don't you guys give us a little bit of an introduction to who you guys are, and we can we'll take it from there.
All right, awesome, man. I'm Manuel. I'm an intern clinical psychologist. I'm 26 years old. I finished my internship last year at Westkoppie Psychiatric Hospital, and I'm currently waiting to do my CompServe. So unemployed and a lot of free time on my hands. So yeah, that's basically me in a nutshell.
Excellent.
And my name is Joshua McQuirk. I'm 25 years old, so Manuel's the old one. And I'm just doing a few part-time jobs at the moment. I've also got a lot of free time. And I used to be like the school counselor at one of the schools nearby in Pretoria East.
For what you guys are about to take on, you'll need a little bit of free time. Mm. Yeah, you guys are basically about to embark on this massive, massive journey for mental health, actually. But why don't you tell us a little bit about the logistics behind what you're actually doing here?
Yeah, so I think you've already mentioned it. We're cycling from Johannesburg, Joburg to Bloburg, covering about 1,600 kilometers. I think it's roughly 1,673 kilometers to be exact. And obviously, depending on what roads we might be taking on the day, that number might actually increase or might decrease. Let's hope it becomes a bit less. We'll be cycling from Johannesburg all the way down into the Free State, past Bloemfontein, right through the heart of the Karoo. It's going to get really, really dry there. All the way to Ceres and into the Western Cape, just off the coasts there onto the Bloburg Beach. So yeah, let's hope that actually materializes when we go down. Josh, what do you think, man?
yeah, I think it's going to be great. It's over 16 days. You do get the crazier people who've done crazy things on the bike as well. But for them, some guys you chat to, this isn't too crazy, but it still is crazy. So yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I think to anybody listening to this podcast, cycling 1,600 Ks in 16 days sounds pretty wild. I think most of us sit behind our desks and, you know, just do a little bit of writing and some reading from time to time. So actually getting out there is insane. Let's just do some quick maths, but, you know, 1600 kilometers divided by the 16 days means you guys are going to be doing 100 Ks a day. That's a century every day is no easy task. So hats off to you guys. Whose idea was this? This is wild.
Yeah. So this crazy idea was actually something I've been sitting on for quite some time. So, back in 2016, I actually had the privilege of climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. I think the tallest freestanding mountain in Africa. And actually in the world. And basically, after climbing that mountain, I was like, I fell in love with adventure and really the outdoors. And I was like, you know, why not do something even crazier and try and climb Mount Everest? But yeah, back in 2016, 2017, I put together a nice sponsorship proposal. And on that proposal, I had three ideas. I was like, okay, I'm going to be running the Comrades Marathon. I'm going to be cycling from Johannesburg to Cape Town. And then finally, I'm going to try and climb Mount Everest. Obviously that didn't happen. My Mount Everest dream is still alive, but that didn't really materialize. And I was like, after that, I was like, why not still pursue one of those things, which might be a bit more feasible to do and more local, especially now with COVID happening. Why not go and cycle down Cape Town? So yeah, it's been a dream that I've had since about 2017. Yeah, and off I've been dreaming of it and thinking about it. But yeah, this year was the first year where I actually decided, why not use this all this free time that I have on my hands now and make this a reality and pursue one of those dreams. So I think, what was it, in January, Josh?
When did you meet? We both quite busy, but eventually we set a date and we stuck to it to meet up. And I think I've just known that Manuel wants to do something adventurous. And we've just realized, not that we're getting very old, but I mean, Manuel's already married. And and some people, you know, people, they you just get more busy. So we realize if we're going to do something crazy, we need to do it sooner than later, you know?
Yeah.
So we decided we should really... how should we say, seriously consider this. So it took some time to think about it, like practically, and then we eventually decided in February to do it.
We met for coffee in early January, and we were lamenting the fact that we were all getting older, not much younger, and busier, and not and I was like, well, I have all this extra free time, Josh, why don't we just do this? And Josh was like, yeah, why aren't we doing this? And a month later we actually shook hands and were like, after cycling for a couple of weeks, we were like, okay, let's shake hands on this and let's try and do this. So yeah, I think that's basically how the dream come materialized into an actual endeavor that we're gonna really be attempting.
So Josh, when Manny said to you, like, hey, let's do the cycle, your natural reaction was to shake hands with him and say, yes, let's do it, instead of a normal human being that would said, dude, maybe we should check you into Vest Copies because this seems insane.
It's been a long time coming. We've always spoken of all these crazy things for a long time now. So I think that's why eventually it didn't sound too crazy. I don't know. There was something in me that was like really wanting to do something. And I realized it's just not going to get easier as we get older. You know, a lot of people thinking about immigrating. I'm thinking maybe about immigrating. And I'm like, I'm not going to find another crazy person to do it with. And I'm not going to do it solo. So I think for me, the big thing that actually made me do it was that I probably won't have a chance again. It was more of the thing. But, there's something that's just enticing about it, you know, just doing something that's absolutely mad. I don't know.
Yeah.
It feels like you just want to do it.
I think there's a bit of an adrenaline rush that comes with it as well. I think it's the same underlying drive that makes people throw themselves off bridges and go bungee jumping or motocross across the desert or, you know, those type of things. And I think for us, the kind of, the thrill of it was a big thing. And yeah, just trying to break the mold a little bit and not get stuck in a routine of an ordinary life, I think. So
sounds like you're talking about me there a bit too, hey?
Subtle hint there.
Yeah, Josh, I mean, I don't know if you realize what's happened here, but I mean, the psychologist in Manny has definitely primed this reaction in you. I think, you know. Priming is a real psychological technique. It sounds like he's been working this into your brain over the years and years and finally convinced you. Now you think it's your idea. I mean, it's well done, Manny. You've really used your psychology to the best of your ability.
A lot of hard work over many years.
Okay, so obviously this didn't just happen overnight, and I'm assuming that you guys had been cycling for some time before that, because if January was the first time you guys got on bikes, this would just make this more of a danger to yourselves. So I'm sure you guys have been training. What's that been like?
So I think in general, Manuel's been more of a cyclist than me over the years. He's done like 94.7 and all those types of things a few times. So for me, it was more, I mean, I've just been a joy rider, social rider every now and then, honestly, hardly any cycling. I am still quite sporty and so on. So, so that's why I was kind of okay to try and get it started. But the training overall, it's been quite hectic. We hadn't have much time. I mean, we had like 3 months. So we really had to ramp it up quite fast. But overall, yeah, it's been a lot of waking up early, waking up at like 4 to start cycling at 5, just so we can still get other stuff done during the day. We try and cycle at least like five days a week. That's what we've been aiming for. Not that we always get there. eventually now we're averaging, I don't know, what did you say, like 50, at least 50 k's a day we try to get.
Yeah, 50 to 80 kilometers a day. Yeah, that's roughly around like 250 a week kilometers that we're roughly averaging. Myself, I mean, my family's been into cycling for quite some time. So from a teenager age, I've been on the bike quite often, doing like 94s, as Josh was saying. I've done the Cape Argus one. Mm-hmm. My parents are a lot more hectic about it. Yeah, I need to just add here that Josh is being quite humble about his own physical expertise, because he does play professional touch rugby at the provincial level.
So
he's quite the fitness machine. So I think in terms, it was rather easy for Josh to get used to it, whereas I had to kind of ramp it up from January to probably like a year of not doing anything, getting on the bike again and actually getting a bit more serious into it. It's been definitely challenging. The early mornings have been really rough, I won't lie. And the monotony of getting up every morning at around 4 o'clock, going to bed that early, it eats away at your motivation. So,
You really start to consider, really ask yourself why you're doing it. It's good, because we carried on and we realized it's important why we're doing this. I think one of the challenges also, since you asked about the challenges during our training, was just the amount of issues that we had with our bikes. Honestly, we didn't think we would have so many issues, like punctures and... and other things breaking, the whole jockey yoke thing. Manuel's broke once where it like flipped into his into the spokes of his bike, and mine also cracked when I hit something. Just weird things when you chat to cyclists, it doesn't really happen that often. We had a few of those
big accidents, I would say. I mean, on that note, I'll definitely share a picture maybe on my social medias a bit later, and even to you, I think it was like the third or fourth week of my getting into cycling, was I think in March. I actually tried picking up a water bottle that had just fallen over my bike. So I was holding my bike, trying to balance the bike whilst trying to reach over my bike to grab a water bottle. And I had face planted my entire face into the front bar of my bicycle, and I had actually managed to break my tooth in front. Chipped my entire front tooth, and actually I thought I had knocked out all my teeth, because it was like I had all these little bits of my tooth in my mouth, and I was actually, I had quite a shock at first. I was like, shucks, like I've completely ruined my entire front row of teeth. But the guy I was cycling with, he just looked at me and was like, oh no, it's just your little corner of your one tooth, it's fine. Do you want to keep cycling? And I was like, actually not, I need to go to the dentist right away. But yeah, that was quite a freak accident that we had.
My goodness.
We've got too much skin in the game now to pull out as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
Skin and teeth. A portion of these funds are being raised for Manny's dentistry bills.
That's the actual reason.
This whole time. So you mentioned the bicycles. Let's take a look at those things. I mean, that's an integral part of this. And like you said, you guys have had some challenges with them along the way. What bikes are you doing this on? If you're not doing it on e-bikes, then I couldn't do it.
Yeah. That would be quite a good idea, actually. I mean, if we get sponsors. No, I'm just kidding.
Specialized, if you're listening, these two would love.
Yes, exactly. I'm actually using Manuel's, as your dad's bike. It's a Specialized bike, the Rock Hopper.
Exactly.
And your bike is a...
I've got a Merida Big 9. I think it's like a... Yeah, both of them are mountain bikes.
Yeah.
They've got shocks in the front, no shocks in the back. So they're both hardtail mountain bikes, which I think we went for specifically because most of what we're going to be cycling, I think it's about 60% road and then 40% gravel.
Wow.
Of the route. So we need to be able to manage both those like logistics and obstacles in terms of the terrain we'll be cycling in. It's not just easy flat roads or roads for that matter. So if it would have been nice to, go on a road bike, but I think the route we've chosen for logistical reasons, forces us to actually drive on or use mountain bikes. And that makes them quite heavy. And mountain bikes are a lot heavier than road bikes on average, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those are basically the bikes we'll be using.
But definitely a more comfortable riding position in comparison to a standard road bike or a triathlon bicycle. So perhaps not the end of the world.
Definitely.
However, when you ride hardtails for so long, you're going to finish with very hard tails.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Yeah, we'll get into that a bit later as well, because that's a huge concern, actually.
Yeah, the mountain bikes also have a lot more gear, so we can take it slower on the uphills and so on with the mountain bike. So overall, it's probably quite good.
Yeah, I think a good call there, especially the fact that you guys are going to be doing quite a bit of riding on gravel as well. Yeah, I think mountain bike's the way to go there. Although e-bikes would have been lovely, but then I think you're kind of cheating the sponsors.
Yeah, exactly. It already is downhill, so.
Well, technically, yes, but.
I did see the route profile, and we'll get to that in a bit, but there's some heavy days, boys. I hope you're ready for those ones. Just before we leave the bicycles, obviously you guys are, kind of taking your own like kit and equipment and your clothes and stuff. You're packing your bikes up quite big. You have panniers that you're loading up, and what kind of effect is that going to have on your cycling?
I think, so we basically, both our bikes, we're going to have panniers on the back. So basically, for those of us who don't know, panniers are just, big bags that you put at the side of your bicycle. We'll be loading them up as lightly as possible, but obviously, given the nature of the trip, 16 days, we're going to pack a lot of technical kits mostly. We're probably going to be wearing like one t-shirt, one pair of shorts, enough warm clothing because we're going to be going down in winter or the beginning of winter. But I think the heaviest part of what we're going to be packing is a technical kit. So, for example, we'll definitely be having a first aid kit. But in terms of the bikes, I mean, a spare chain, for example, a chain breaker, the extra whatever tubes that we're going to be carrying, maybe spare spokes that we'll be needing in case anything goes wrong. Because I think that's also been very heavy on the bikes, is putting those panniers and loading them up with weights. Your bicycle wasn't necessarily designed to be carrying 15 kgs or 12 kgs at the back of your bike. You're really putting the bicycles through their paces. And I think that's also been a reason why we've had a few technical errors and issues come up as we've been training for this. And I think it's been good because we've been learning how to fix our own bikes, servicing our own bikes. And those are kind of challenges that we'll be having along the way, because when we stop in the Karoo, there's not going to be a nice bicycle shop to hand in the bicycles to. So,
Yo, because I mean, we'll discuss this in a little bit as well, but you guys are doing this unsupported as well. So you don't necessarily have a team of people behind you, cool, Manny's bike, the derailleur's caught up in the spokes again for the 14th time, Manny. Like, we'll just get the guys from, the local cycle shop to sort that out. So that's a massive challenge that, hopefully you guys have, you guys have done some training on how to fix your own bikes. And I guess within the town, you could probably get some support if need be. But I'm sure that as this thing grows and more people follow and more people like the page and stuff like that, I'm sure that, if you did get it stuck somewhere, somebody could come to your rescue. Well, I'm hoping.
Yeah, the unsupported... we'll not be having anyone who's cycling or traveling alongside us for the trip. However, we've planned to have emergency contact in every little town that we pass through on the days that we, for example, sleep at, so that in case anything does go wrong, that we'll have a number to call a person that might be able, maybe 100 Ks out, which is still a lot better than 1,000 Ks out, if anything does happen, or if we really get stuck and we need someone to come and pick us up or something like that. So sure. we've thought about some of this, but unsupported is going to be probably the biggest challenge in terms of the food. And also the water, cycling for 10 hours a day, you're going to have to need a lot of water. That's actually what probably makes the bikes the heaviest, is carrying extra water, probably like 6 liters of water each of us on our bicycles in addition to the kit. It's probably to be on the safe side. You don't want to get anywhere and not have any water.
It sounds like you guys have thought of almost everything, going into this. And it kind of just makes me think that, the one of the hardest challenges in this whole thing is not necessarily the cycle, it's the organization of everything beforehand. What's that been like?
Well, I think it's it like caught us, you know, we weren't necessarily ready for the amount of logistics. I think we thought it would be a lot easier than it has been.
Yeah.
From my side, but there's definitely a lot of small things that we have to keep on fixing, and hopefully by the end of this week we'll have everything sorted.
I think for myself, with, you know, having this dream, it was always this romantic idea of, you know, why not do something so crazy and cycling, you know, all the way down to Cape Town. Let me just get on my bike, pack a backpack and go for it, you know. And now in preparation for this, and also to do this responsibly, I mean,
yeah,
Josh mentioned I'm married, so I've got some responsibilities there as well. and just, you know, to the people around you, you want to do this safely and responsibly.
Yeah.
So romantic idea aside, the logistics has been probably the biggest thing in terms of preparation, thinking about the route, exactly what roads we'll be using, which towns we'll be passing through, the kit we'll be carrying. And I think they've taken up the most time of all of this. The cycling has been probably 80% of what we've been doing in preparation, and the other stuff has been just organizing accommodation, looking for sponsors. Yeah, doing all of this in about 3 months has been a real challenge, I think, to say the least. Mm-hmm. It's been a lot of fun, and I really think, I wouldn't say we have thought of everything yet, but I think we've thought of all the necessary things that will make this as safely and possibly as possible.
Yeah. And as easy as we can make it, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, Manny, we chat from time to time about what you're doing on a daily, like a day to day, you know, with your organizing, and I'm blown away. You're busy constantly, and even trying to squeeze in the podcast. I was like, I wonder if we're going to get this done. You guys are cycling in the mornings, and then literally just, you know, sponsors, you know, from day to day, talking to the places that you're potentially going to be, you know, funding, getting people on board. It's insane. So my hat's off to you guys. You know, when you see somebody doing one of these things, you don't actually think about the logistics. It's basically like the fundamental attribution error. You apply all of the things. Oh, this looks really cool. That must have been like 5 minutes to organize, but it's not. It's months and months and months of, you know, hard graft in terms of the organizing. So congrats, man. That's really, really cool. I think that's an achievement in itself.
Yeah, no, thanks.
So when did you guys start?
We basically start on the 30th of April. So basically, yeah, what's that, 11 days from now? On the dot exactly. 30th of April, we'll be starting just south of Joburg. Meyerton is the area called, and we'll be starting in Henley on Clip. Basically that's us. We're probably going to be starting around 5 o'clock in the morning, a very early day in, and we'll be traveling, I think, around about 120 kilometers on our first day, all the way to a little town called Corbis. Basically, 120 kilometers south of Joburg.
We spoke about it earlier, about 100 Ks a day that you need to cover. There'll obviously be some longer days and some shorter days. Are there any really, really long days that you'll have to be doing?
Yes. We think in the Karoo, and also in the beginning, there's a few days where we have like three long days after one another. Mm. But I think the longest one is the... From Sutherland to
Sadawa Game Reserve. So that's basically right in the heart of the Karoo. It's about 140 kilometers that we'll be cycling on that day. And that would be on day 14 of our trip. So we have quite a few, I think, 3 days where we'll be cycling over 120 kilometers on average to about 140 kilometers. But yeah, we're gonna need a very early start to the day, because I think that's probably going to be like easily 12 hours of cycling comfortably. I don't know if we can call 12 hours.
With breaks.
Yeah, definitely.
I also think we also have some rest, have like two rest-ish days.
Yeah.
Exactly. Where it's like 40Ks, the other day is 60 or 50 or something around those.
Yeah.
So those rest. Are the days that like, just to, if we don't know if one of us starts getting a bit sick and needs some extra sleep, or if... I think we'll probably need that.
Around halfway through, we've planned a rest day where we actually just cycle around, I think, 44 kilometers. And that day is just planned to, you know, maybe be 2 or 3 hours on the bike, and I try and spend as little time as possible on the bike, some extra sleep in, and just have a really relaxed day. Because the other days, we'll probably be on the bike from morning till late in the afternoon.
Wow. I mean, those are some proper long days. And then in terms of the route profile, like I said earlier, it seems pretty downhill and flat for the first little bit, but around day, 13 or 14, there seems to be an uphill that I don't want to attempt. It looks like you guys are going straight up Table Mountain.
Yeah, I think that's, just after we hit Sutherland and then pass through the Karoo, we have about 1,000 meters of descent, just traveling from the Karoo all the way down into Ceres. And then once we get to Ceres, basically that's where the big mountains come. The Ceres Valley is what we like to call it. And yeah, I think that's about 1,400 meters of ascent over a day. And that I think is on day 15 actually. And yeah, we might think about this on the day when we get there to, if we're physically not strong enough to do it in a single day, split it across 2 days, but that's like our plan B emergency. If pedal to the metal and we really just can't make it anymore. So we have a plan B for that because it is extremely, extremely tough. Just in terms of the elevation, we've been looking to really try and train on high elevation gains. So I think the last couple of rides, the long rides we've done, we've all had around 900 to 1,000 meters of ascent in our training rides. So yeah, to prepare ourselves for those days and cycling with the panniers, make it as realistically to our route as possible.
Every day won't necessarily end with you in a town or in a game reserve or anything like that. What happens if, you know, you've had to cut your cycle in the middle of nowhere? Does somebody come back and fetch you? Does somebody come forward and fetch you, take you back? Like how does that work?
On one of our days, I think we've as far as possible, we've tried to limit it to actually getting to the town on the day, just in terms of logistics, making it a lot easier instead of having a car come out to meet us or complete strangers picking us up. But yeah, I think on the first day where we cycle 120 days, we've got people living in Kroonstad who are going to be traveling all the way to meet us at Koppies, pick us up, we'll sleep in Kroonstad, and then the next morning bring us back to where we were in Koppies and continue the cycle. We've made arrangements there, but for the most part, it was actually just not feasible to just stop in the middle of nowhere. Originally, we were planning on stopping at a little stall in the middle of the Karoo, but after not having heard anything back from them in terms of contacting them, we decided maybe that's stall is not the best place to stop. It was literally like 150 kilometers into the desert. There's a little hut and then nothing else. So we're like, okay, we're going to have to change the route a bit to just accommodate for that. Yeah, so again, trying to do this and arrive alive as well, not just...
Yeah, for sure. Heading into the middle of the Karoo could be quite hectic. I did some riding around there in November last year, and there's a lot of nothing that side of the world. So, you know, that kind of brings up the fact that you guys are doing this unsupported and without a second. I guess you've taken into account areas where you do need somebody to help you out when you are kind of in the middle of nowhere. Surely you guys have thought of the other dangers that come with this sort of cycle. Obviously you mentioned water and stuff like that. And in a lot of these areas, you're not going to have cell phone reception. Do you have backups? Do you have people, you know, waiting and looking for you? Have you set these sort of things up?
Yeah, so that's a very good point. The dangers of this undertaking are quite massive. Number one, just on a medical side of things, there's actual real dangers in terms of nerve damage that we can actually sustain by doing this for too long, specifically on our behind and our bums. Your body was not made, for those of us who didn't know, your body wasn't made or designed to be on the bicycle and a little seat for 10 or 12 hours a day for 16 days. So basically we've chatted to a couple of guys who've done something similar, and they basically told us every 20 minutes of your cycle, it's very important to get up out of your saddle, stretch a little bit, just spend a minute or two off the saddle to allow the blood to keep flowing through all your areas of your body. Because otherwise saddle sores, you can start developing saddle sores. Mm-hmm. And basically that's when your bum bones press so hard against your bum muscles for too long that they actually cut off the blood supply and the blood circulation there. Basically your flesh starts rotting from the inside out, and that's something we really want to avoid, because that would constitute a medical emergency, and we'd have to cut our ride short if that ever happened. We're really trying not to sustain any of that. And in terms of the GPS, we've got
those some guys helping us out there with the sponsors, actually.
So
Manny was dealing with that, and then basically they will be able to, basically someone can track us through the whole route. Mm. That will really help us when we don't have signal, with our phones and so on. But I don't know if you want to share a little more about that.
Yeah, we actually approached a company called Sat4Rent. And yeah, it's going to be a shameless plug, but yeah, thank you so much to Sat4Rent for sponsoring us while we're doing this. So we basically organized a spot device, which is basically a GPS tracking device, which will allow, first of all, everyone who's following our Cycle for Mental Health Instagram page, follow us as we go down. So it will actually be exactly following our route that we go on. We'll be having those devices on our bicycle or on ourselves so that people know where we are, what we're doing in terms of the map. And also that device is able to send out, for example, SMSs and also SOS signals in case anything really does, you know, hit the fan and we need an emergency, someone to come out immediately. We'll be having that. So we've thought of that as well. Just to make tracking a lot easier for us, but also for people who are following us to see where we're at.
Yeah.
Because cell phone signal is a big issue out in the middle of nowhere. So we needed a GPS device to make this a bit more feasible for us.
Yeah. And as we mentioned earlier, we're going to be having a first aid kit and all that type of stuff. So we're still going to be taught on some of the basic, proper bad cuts from, if one of us has a bike accident, obviously that's one of the worst ones because then your bike is also messed up and you are lacerated. And, you know, so we'll learn how to fix each other up if one of us has a real big fall, but we doubt that's going to happen. We're going to be taking it quite slow, but we hopefully we'll be prepared for that if that happens.
Yeah, and blister management is another big thing. In terms of blisters, and there's also chamois cream. So having the cycling shorts, they have these pads in them that they're called chamois. And we were told very emphatically to keep creaming our pants and also our behinds with that cream to make sure we don't develop any saddle sores. And also the chafing gets quite real. So skin will be lost and hopefully not too much blood will be shed, but the management thereof is actually the more important part.
I mean, I think it's really great that Sat4Rent have come on board and helped you guys out of that, because I think that's definitely going to keep you guys in touch with the world and keep you in touch with us, you know. Cognition Co. will do our best to share where you guys are every day and try to keep the world updated with where you guys, obviously, along with your guys' social media page as well. But we'll try our best to keep everybody, you know, checking back in on you guys and seeing how you're doing. So, we're looking forward to that. The whole crux of this is that you're doing it for mental health. And I think, you know, that's why we decided to get involved as well, because it's obviously something we're extremely passionate about as well. And this is such a physical, such a beautiful thing that you guys are doing to raise funds for mental health. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about your reasoning and what your plans are in that sphere?
Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned it earlier already when I climbed Kilimanjaro back in 2016, I actually had planned on doing it for autism. And raising some awareness around autism. My grandfather, actually in 1975, was the first guy to actually start a school for children with autism in Pretoria here. So it's been something that's been very close to my heart in terms of the mental health aspect. I think has deeply influenced me to pursue a career in mental health as a psychologist. And as an intern psychologist right now, I've had a very intimate view and experience of people who are struggling with mental illnesses and specifically looking at mental health in general in our society in South Africa. So the mental health aspect has been a huge reason, and I would probably say that the crux of this entire trip for us. It's one thing to have the motivation to do something crazy and get out there and do something adventurous. That only keeps you going for so long, and you need a bit of a deeper reason or an understanding of why you're actually pursuing this. So for me, it's been very, very close to my heart to actually advocate for better mental health in South Africa, to actually start having a bit of a conversation around, you know, what are the pitfalls, what are the challenges at a societal level in our communities that are preventing us from having and addressing better mental health. We decided to partner actually with the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, SADAC, and they were really keen on getting involved with us to support our cause. We wanted to just create some awareness around that. And even Josh, I mean, you've had some experiences in dealing with mental health, specifically at the youth level, working in schools. Josh, you can say.
So I think from my side, it's just such a big it's a big thing to see how much just chatting to someone, going to see a counselor or a psychologist and change your life. But people don't really believe you until they actually go do it themselves. And I think there's so much value that can be taken from it. And I just wish, hopefully through this, that people at least know, like maybe they should do something about it. I mean, I remember I used to share a few things of mental health tips on Facebook for quite a while at one stage. And then like a year later, one of my friends from overseas said, so grateful for that, because he actually ended up going to see a psychologist because he realized he might have a bit of depression. And it turns out he did, and he was able to really work through that. And so just, I hope that through this, we could maybe help change some people's lives. And I think one of the big things, what I've noticed in school and just amongst the youth, and if you look at the stats, I've been, these released stats, I think in 2018 or so, it's about 23 suicides a day in South Africa. Mm. So, and I mean, I've had acquaintances who've committed suicide, people who I've kind of known a bit. And you just wish that they maybe knew how to speak about it. Or I know a lot of people who might have friends or family who have depression, but they don't know how to help. So I really hope that through this, just creating a bit more awareness, just talking about more, that people will be able to have their lives changed and just live just to thrive, not just to survive and just to get through life, but to enjoy it.
Mm. Yeah, it's such a huge need in the country for mental health. It's probably one of the biggest things that makes us, you know, who we are on a day-to-day basis, but gets overlooked so much and gets neglected so much. I mean, for myself as an intern, I remember last year sitting with clients, but also for myself at a personal level, I actually burnt out quite a bit towards the end, and I was like not looking after myself that much. So that the whole self-care aspect of actually practicing what you preach amongst, I think, psychologists as well is a huge, huge thing. And just shedding some light on that and getting that conversation going, like you said, you know, is help, there are treatment methods and therapy, you know, is evidence-based, you know, there is actually something that works and we want to advocate for that. So, I mean, yeah, for every suicide that happens, I think there's about in more that attempted suicides. I think that's our 23 suicides a day and the 230 attempted suicides in a day in South Africa. And recently I was you know, when I switched on the TV and I watched Cassie Chambers from SADC speak about the high levels of calls that they have, the call volumes that have gone up for SADC, the different helplines that they have available. And they said since the start of lockdown, over 500,000 people have actually phoned them and contacted them. And I was just absolutely taken aback by that, to see, you know, there's such a dire need for mental health and supporting people who are suffering from mental illnesses. I mean, there's so many, from Life SEDMNE up until now, I think there's so much work that still needs to be done around stigmatizing mental health, especially mental illnesses, and getting that conversation going. And I mean, Ben, you yourself running Cognition & Co. Have had multiple experiences and exposures to what we're talking about as well. So yeah, I think that's really a part of this whole endeavor is actually the mental health and driving support donations for SADC and also awareness around mental health.
Yeah, I think just another thing that I think is so important here and invaluable to the cause is that you guys are two males that are doing this, you know, and I think males often carry the biggest stigma, especially in our societies and our communities, because there's kind of this mentality, you know, cowboys don't cry and we're not allowed to be emotional. And I think, like, you know, two guys doing this, doing something that is, you know, almost seems unachievable to your average human being, and doing it for such a noble cause, and showing, you know, listen, we wouldn't be doing this if we didn't believe that this was a real thing and we didn't believe that this was, you know, something worth getting involved in this massive adventure for. You know, it really stands out to me as something really, really incredible. And I'm so stoked to be involved and helping out where I can here. But you guys are the real heroes here. And I'm so, so grateful that Manny, you contacted me when you started talking about this, and I could play a role in it. I might not be cycling it, but I'm glad that I can be getting it out in the ways that I'm able to. So hopefully there'll be a lot of people listening to this and taking a lot from it and hearing it from the individuals that are, you know, Manny's psychologist or will be a fully registered psychologist soon after ComServe and hearing it from the people who are supposed to be telling us. So thank you. And I know that during your cycle as well, you'll be sharing stuff like mental health, like tips or statistics or just basically opening conversations about it. And I think that's also so incredible. And hopefully we'll also be able to maybe do a catch-up podcast with you midway through this whole journey and perhaps one at the end as well. So we can kind of, you know, see this narrative play out a little bit more. Mm. I think that'd be incredible. So hopefully we do get to do that. How can people support you?
Yeah. So I think the biggest part, what we were going to be having is the Instagram page, Cycle for Mental Health. So you guys can give us a follow there. We'll also have a link there for our backup page. There's a link in our bio there, which is basically kind of a GoFundMe, but more so for charities. So it's specifically aimed at raising some donations, some sponsors, any monetary contribution, be it a 5 rand, a 20 rand, or a 50 rand, or, you know, even if you want to be generous, and a 1,000 rand towards SADC. And it's basically, now, none of that money goes towards us. It's not like we're trying to enrich ourselves. I wish I could, you know, get those dentists bill paid, but it's actually, the reality is actually that we are trying to do this for SADC. And I think they're one of the largest nonprofit organizations in South Africa who are running a lot of different support groups. They have free telephonic counseling. They've got free telephonic support lines for people. So all of the proceeds of that buddy page are 100% of that is going straight to the South African Depression and Anxiety Group. So it's at Buddy, Cycle for Mental Health, Joburg, Bloburg, that you guys can check us out there. On the Buddy page, the link will be on Instagram. We'll be referring to it multiple times just to get those donations in. And yeah, following us on Instagram, we'll be sharing our entire journey there. We'll probably have a few, stories, posts, live Instagram feeds, those kind of things. And then obviously, you know, through Cognition & Co, the podcasts, you know, putting out the message there. That's basically how you guys can get involved. So please do get involved and share in this epic journey. And let's help tell a beautiful story about mental health in South Africa.
Obviously, if you're listening to this now, you can click on the bio underneath and you'll find all the links to, you know, the Backer Buddy page, to the Cycle for Mental Health Instagram page, to SADC's website, to SADC's call lines. If you're listening to this and feel like you want to reach out and talk to somebody, I'll put that number there as well. Last question. How do your guys' families feel about this?
I'll go for it. I think my family is quite chilled about it, which is nice. But obviously, I think they started realizing a bit more serious when it's like 2 weeks to go. Mm. So they started asking more serious questions and so on. But my father, he's always inspired me to really go for your dreams or your goals. That's his whole business, Map for Life. And he knows a lot of other crazy people who are like cycling around the world, you know, through his business, he's heard of this. So I think for him, it's not too foreign, but he is obviously making sure that we prepare well enough. And obviously some people are a bit nervous for you, and that is good to know. I mean, they care about you. Overall, I don't think I myself have had a hectic backlash, if I can put it like that.
And I mean, from my side, I'm married now, so my wife Eileen, I've had a couple of serious conversations about this because it's obviously 16, 17 odd days where I'll be away from home, not doing something all that non-risky. So yeah, the dangers are quite a reality, especially for us, for Eileen as well. It's extremely, extremely difficult. And I've tried to kind of reframe it for myself that it's not just myself trying to do this, not just me and Josh trying to do this, but actually, you know, me and my wife, my family, we're all in this kind of together, because it's like no one is just, you know, an isolated unit, individual doing this crazy thing. It's like I and every person, there's a whole army of other people that are doing this. My parents are quite supportive, but we had a really frank and serious conversation yesterday about some of the realistic dangers of this. So my mom is basically thinking of one or two days spotting us, perhaps, it's nothing final yet, seconding, just coming down with the vehicle just to see if we're still all right, if we're still alive. But yeah, on the other side of things, so my parents, father and mother-in-law in Germany, shout out to all the German listeners. it's quite a serious and hard conversation to have, especially with them. They are supportive, but they are also quite, I think they have a lot of respect, and also they are very worried about us. So I think heart is in the right place to say, listen, you guys can do this, but please be doing this responsibly and safely. You know, you don't want to end up with permanent nerve damage. You don't want to end up with saddle sores, and you don't want to, you know, get hit by a car or, you know, any other dangers or risks associated. So yeah, it's not an easy one, but what we're getting there. And yeah.
Yeah. I think it was quite weird for us in the beginning. The first person who we spoke to just said, just do it. And yeah, you guys were able to do it. He didn't even ask us about our training or anything. And then he just said, don't let anyone talk you out of it. It's very interesting. And he is one of those crazy guys who does all these ridiculous cycling stuff. So obviously you have to take what he said with a pinch of salt. It was just funny to hear him and then hear everyone else after that as well. So we've got, I think, two different and good perspectives. Mm. Obviously, if you just stay in the one group, you'll think everything is completely fine and it's not that crazy. And if you go in the other group, you'll probably never do anything like this. Mm. So you've got to be both aware and still go for it. And so, yeah.
And it really helps getting your head out of the clouds and getting it back to reality and be like, okay, it is all a romantic and great idea and endeavor, but at the same time, there are risks. There are real risks associated, and we need to be prepared for this. So I think everyone we've spoken to are concerned, but are encouraged by what we're trying to do. So I think concerned is the biggest word I would use when wrapping that up. How do our families feel? They are concerned, but supportive.
Yeah, I have faith in you guys that you've done your due diligence. Oh my goodness, I'll have to edit that. I've complete faith that you guys have done your due diligence. Oh my God, I'm never going to get that right. That you guys have prepped. I'll just leave that in. Like, really, this is such a noble endeavor, and you know, I support you guys completely. And like I said to you, Manny, I'll do my best if my schedule pans out to maybe perhaps meet you guys up by the Gerib Dam. I'll jump on my bike and come, you know, spend a day with you guys, even second if I can, and maybe take load my bike panniers up with your guys' stuff and give you guys a break there. And maybe bring some tubes and bombs.
Thank you. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'll do what I can to get involved as well. My schedule is a little bit hectic, but I will definitely try that. And then, like I said, hopefully we can do a catch up midway through this and, you know, maybe get you guys on the phone if there's some Wi-Fi along the way somewhere at one of the stops and, you know, kind of just do a quick catch up, even if it's 10, 15 minutes, just to see what's happening with you guys, how it's going and, you know, what's really materialized in this thing. But without a doubt, guys, we wish you the best of luck, and we'll have you in our thoughts the entire time. And we will definitely be checking in to make sure you guys are safe and sound at the end of each day. And we look forward to you know what you're able to bring us and what you're able to do over those 16, 17 days. And I'm truly, truly grateful that you guys took the time to chat to me here today and give me a better understanding, even though I've known about this for a while and I've known some of the inner workings. Just getting to chat a little bit with you guys personally, getting to know you guys personally, has been invaluable to getting me on board and you know, wanting to support even further. So thanks a lot. All the best.
Yeah, thank you. A huge shout out, I mean, to Cognition & Co. and especially you, Dylan, for helping us out so much. I think there were a lot of behind the scenes stuff that are happening still and have happened. So yeah, thank you very much for all of that. And yeah, we really look forward to partnering further with you guys and making this whole endeavor a reality. So yeah, let's really go for it. And you guys can all follow us and hopefully actually happen on the 15th of May.
Yeah, thank you once again.
Sure, it's gonna happen, guys. It's locked in the calendars. It's happening.
It's happening.
Indeed, it is happening. If you'd like to follow the boys on their journey, please give their Instagram page a follow. And if you want to contribute to their cause, please visit their Back Buddy page. All the links are in the description below. That's it for another episode of the Cognition & Co. podcast. This podcast is now available on all major streaming apps, so please make sure you give it a follow so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you soon.